at visitmaine.com.
And this is WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. We're going to start radioactivity right now. Summer Girard is back with us, though. So is Sean Canaan. And Summer, congratulations.
Thank you so much, Rob. I can't do it without Sean and you and WMNF support and Patty and Frank and all the wonderful people in the phone room, at the phone room, answering phone calls. I want to thank Atiq Alvi from Wesley Chapel. He has always given us money, Rob, for the past 15 years. $100. He wants the 17 ounce beverage bottle. He loves the True Talk and he thanks me. Thank you so much, Brother Atiq. You always come through and help us. And best of luck, Rob. I hope we will always have WMNF, whether True Talk makes the goal or not and meets the goal or not. But I think we did.
You did reach the goal and you met the challenge. That was incredible. And so we'll all here and see you next week.
Inshallah, God willing. Thank you so much and best of luck.
Safe drive back.
Okay, thank you.
And Sean Canaan is here. We're going to hear more of Democracy Now! Today and the interview with Glenn Green.
Yeah, Glenn Greenwald is going to be on the show.
I should say, if you haven't looked at the WMNF website, look at the WMNF website for Sean's story about the young woman who was a student from here in Florida. She was admitted to a university in Israel, but she was turned away. And there's a really important story that may have huge implications. So I think some of the national press is picking it up. So take a look at our website, WMNF.org. Well, in the next 2 hours, I'll be here for the next 2 hours along with Sean, and Daniel Ruth is going to pop in, and we're going to talk about politics later on in this program, and Dan's going to spend an hour talking about politics, but we're also going to try to raise some money as we try to keep WMNF on the air for another 3 or 4 months. You never hear a commercial here on WMNF. You might hear underwriting. That's when a company says, look, we'll have our tagline and we'll give you some money, but the company doesn't give you a call to action or anything like that. So there is underwriting. Most of that underwriting you hear is on the NPR newscast. None of that money goes to WMNF. It just helps to reduce the cost of the NPR newscast. We have a goal in the next 2 hours of raising $6,000. And we are going to hear Democracy Now! In just a moment. But two anonymous people, somebody from St. Petersburg has just donated $88.50. Thank you, Anonymous, for that nice donation. She likes this 11 o'clock show. And thanks to Anonymous making a $50 contribution, also likes the 11 a.m. weekday show. So Anonymous and Anonymous, thank you very much. And we're on our way to raising $6,000 over the next 120 minutes.
And Rob, I have two more people to thank from True Talk that donated during that show. Maxim Wasshaw from Tampa is getting the Trump Survival Kit flash drive. And she's donating $10 per month on the Circle of Friends. So thank you for becoming a Circle of Friends member. Also, we have Anonymous who likes True Talk and all the other shows. And this is a donation of $100 from Brandon. And this person is getting a men's t-shirt. So thank you for those two donations. Now we need to hear from you to support Radioactivity. The number to call in is 813-238-8001. You can also pledge on the web at WMNF.org.
And we should say that Trump Survival Kit is something that we really haven't talked much about, but it features some of the best programs that you can hear on our HD3. It's mainly Pacifica hosts doing interviews with some of the noted scholars and thinkers and writers from around the country and around the world about everything that President Trump has done in the first year and a half in office. The Trump Survival Kit is an audio collection. It's on a flash drive, and you can have it for a $100 contribution. Among the people on it, Stephanie Kelton, who's a noted economist, Robert Baer, who's a former national security analyst and CIA agent, Thomas Frank, the author, is on this. And it is a really nice collection of hours and hours and hours of interviews about President Trump. Phyllis Bannis is on this, who's a critic of U.S. foreign policy, and Richard Wexler, just many other people, David Courtwright, the peace activist. You can have this You can have this flash drive that is called the Trump Survival Kit. It comes to us from the Pacifica Radio Network, and you can have it for a $100 contribution. Well, let's go back and listen to more of today's Democracy Now! I should say, too, that one other thing is that we're going to hear Glenn Greenwald, the founder of the website.
The Intercept.
The Intercept, yes. And one of our former student interns here at WMNF, mm-hmm. Eric Bates, for a long time worked for The Intercept. So you never know what's going to happen to somebody that gets their start here on WMNF. It may turn into bigger and better things. So let's listen to more of today's Democracy Now! This is WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM.
I was taken to Mosul with others. I was used in the way they wanted to use me. I was not alone. And perhaps I was the lucky one. As time passed, I found a way to escape where thousands of others could not. They are still captive.
Nobel Peace Prize winner Nadia Murad through a translator at the UN and Dr. Dennis Mukwege. We're continuing with Eve Ensler, the award-winning playwright and author, founder of V-Day. You just got off the phone with Dr. Mukwege.
I did.
Speaking to him at the hospital in the Congo. Talk about, and you've worked with both of them, Nadia as well. Mm-hmm. Talk about Dr. Mukwege's work and the work you both have done together in Congo.
I just want to say, you know, Carl Jung once said that surviving this century will be holding two opposite thoughts at the same time, you know. And I'm thinking here we have the Kavanaugh hearings and Dr. Mukwege. So what I want to say is Dr. Mukwege and Nadia, I mean, it's so fantastic that they've chosen both a doctor who has been fighting to end rape as a weapon of war and a survivor of that, and that they've honored them together because it's just a model of how men and women should be working together on these issues across the world. I met Dr. Mukwege in 2006 when I was asked to interview him for the UN. And when I met him, I was overwhelmed by the fact that his eyes were so bloodshot, witnessing all the atrocities and horrors he had seen. He invited me to come to the Democratic Republic of Congo so V-Day could support his work. And I remember the first day I arrived at Panzi Hospital, and there were hundreds and hundreds of women, all of whom had been tortured and raped, many of whom had been operated on. All of them were in the hospital under his care, under his love, under his magnificent, radiant energy. And I stood there and I thought I had arrived at the end of the world. But there was this man, this towering man of grace and dignity and commitment and devotion, literally sewing up women's vaginas as fast as the militias were tearing them apart and desperately trying to get the word out to the world that this war, this economic war that was being fought for the resources, particularly coltan, which goes into our cell phones and computers, where militias are desecrating villages, having husbands rape daughters and sons rape mothers, so they destroy the families flee, the militias take over the mines, and they are proxies for multinationals who then take the coltan back to us to go into our cell phones and computers. I saw this man who I had never seen a man like that. I had never seen a man who was literally giving his life to stop rape, to end sexual violence, to call attention to what rape as a systematic tool of war was doing to the women of Congo and would be doing if it were not curtailed to many more women throughout the world in many more countries. And I have watched him. I mean, I have had the privilege of traveling with him across this country, across Europe, across the world, Africa, where I have watched him tell his story over and over at the UN, at the European Parliaments, at the White House, telling it and telling it and telling it, risking ostracization, risking criticism, risking his life. There was an assassination attempt on him, I think, 4 years ago, where they almost murdered him and murdered the driver who worked with him, kidnapped his daughter for 20 minutes, and now he is living literally under security at the hospital, no longer living in his home. He is a man of devotion, and I think at this moment, he is modeling a way of being as a man who is standing with survivors, with us. And he said to me this morning, he said, this award is not just my award. It's an award for every survivor. in this world, every woman who has been working for years to end this. And he said, we don't just need recognition, we need reparations. We need to end impunity, because impunity is allowing this to continue and continue. And as we're seeing at the Supreme Court, if there is no justice, if there is no accountability, this is how rape spreads. And we've seen that over 14 years in the Congress.
You know, I could only think, you know, there was all sorts of discussions of the short list, and Dr. Mukwege has been on that list for a number of years. He was even, the Nobel Prize officials were even asked about why this year. And you have to think about that, because among the other people whose names are being bandied about for this war today was President Trump, because of the North Korea issue and resolving that war. And you could only think, imagine perhaps someone said, but look at, I mean, 16 women have accused him of sexual assault, and the Nobel Committee is dealing with its own controversies around sexual
Indeed.
Assault and rape. And so they went in the other direction. And they honored Dr. Denis Mukwege and Nadia Murad, who V-Day has also supported.
Nadia is one of the most extraordinary, brave, grace-filled woman, and we had the pleasure of working with her and supporting Yazidi women, and I got to meet her and I did a piece about her. But she's so young, she has been through some of the worst atrocities, but she has turned her life to devoting it to not only saving the women and speaking out against the genocide against the Yazidi people, but also becoming an incredible spokesperson and model for ending the scourge of sexual violence and used as a weapon of war in armed conflict. And I think this award hopefully will signal to the world, and particularly to men, that there is a different way of being, you know, that we have to honor survivors, we have to honor women like Nadia Murad who stand up, and we have to say to men, there isn't a way you can act, you can devote your life to any violence against women. You can devote your life to working with and standing beside us, and you don't become less of a man. You become more of a man and more of a human. I mean, you only have to meet Dr. Mukwege to see the light, to see the radiance, to see the love, to see the beauty that pours through that man who has given his life to the women of his country.
You know, today, Eve, also marks the first anniversary of the explosive expose in the New York Times around Harvey Weinstein, mm-hmm. really the beginning of the Me Too movement as it's being talked about today, though it was formulated well before that. How far have we come? As you point out, the irony of this day, the Nobel Peace Prize mm-hmm. goes to those who fight sexual violence and to sexual violence survivors. And today, the vote of the Senate, the first vote, the second supposedly as early as tomorrow, not clear, on whether Brett Kavanaugh, who's been accused of sexual assault by several women, will be confirmed to the Supreme Court.
It's a good question, because it seems like the white men in power, that Republican Judiciary Committee and the Republicans are not getting it, are not waking up, are not feeling it, are not in tune. But the genie's out of the bottle. Women are out of the bottle now. They are never going back in. And I think whatever happens with the Kavanaugh hearing, it will never sit right with women of this country. It will never sit right
with
them.
Well, there are elections within a month.
Exactly. Not only elections, but I believe a fury is being unleashed in women. A fury and a determination that we will never turn back from at this point. And I just want to say to all survivors and women out there, this is our crucible moment. And we need to, after whatever happens here, we need to rise and make sure the window that has been opened never closes again. It can't.
Eve Ensler, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Award-winning playwright, author of The Vagina Monologues and so many other books, her latest, In the Body of the World, founder of V-Day. This is Democracy Now! We'll link to her letter to white women against Brett Kavanaugh, her opposition to Brett Kavanaugh, but her letter to white women who are supporting Brett Kavanaugh at democracynow.org. When we come back, we head south to Brazil, where major elections are taking place this weekend. We'll speak with Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Glenn Greenwald. Stay with us.
And we're going to hear Glenn Greenwald in just a moment. A huge election in Brazil on Sunday when a guy who some people say is one of the most far-right people ever elected in the Western Hemisphere is on the ballot. And He is going after a protege of Lula's, Da Silva's, and we'll see where that election goes in Brazil on Sunday. This is WMNF in Tampa. Sean Canaan is here. I'm Rob Lurie. We're going to try it. We're just going to take 3 minutes here and try to raise at least one donation right now. We the signal here at WMNF reaches 4.4 million people. It's a very powerful signal as community radio stations go. This is a radio station that was founded way back in the 1970s when students at the University of South Florida were very angry that their university radio station, which had a lot of student programming on it, was taken over by the administration, and most of the students were summarily kicked off the radio station. There were protests on campus. You're probably not old enough to remember those protests in 1975 on the USF campus, but there were actually people protesting on campus against the administration takeover of WUSF. This is the radio station that came out of that, started by a USF student years ago. The station was founded by volunteers, people that went door to door here in the Tampa Bay area to raise money to put a unique radio station on the air. It was kind of the height of the community radio movement back in the late 1970s, as people discovered that there were open frequencies on the FM dial where you could, if you got a board of directors together and created a nonprofit, you could create your own radio station. Well, that's what the folks that started WMNF did. Today, we're trying to keep this radio station going. We need to raise, in the next hour and a half, we need to raise about $5,000. Daniel Ruth will be along in just a moment, but we're hoping that you will call in at 813-238-8001. And if you're a fan of Radioactivity, if you love listening to that Eve Ensler interview, if you're looking forward to the Glenn Greenwald interview, please make a contribution now. This is the way we stay on the air. We don't have a whole lot of underwriting here on WMNF. 70% of the money that it takes to run the radio station comes from good people who are out there listening and say voluntarily, hey, I'll make a contribution because this is unique. There is no radio station like it in all of Florida, a full-power community radio station with 24/7 programming, including about 5 or 6 hours a day of intense, heavy-duty quality news and public affairs. 813-238-8001. Sean, we need to get one line lit. The red lights are not flashing above us. We need to get one red light lit at 813-238-8001.
We need to hear from you if you support Radioactivity, if you like the Democracy Now! Show that you're hearing right now with Eve Ensler and with soon to be with Glenn Greenwald. We do need to hear that there is support. You can donate online at WMNF.org or you can call 813-238-8001. And a second ago, Amy was saying she was announcing what's going to happen, a vote today in the Senate. And of course, you may have heard at the top of the hour, the vote on Kavanaugh will advance to a final floor vote. It was advanced 51-49. Senator Joe Manchin, a Democrat, voted to allow it to go ahead. And
Lisa Murkowski voted against it. Yeah.
So it's
Alaska.
And later today, Senator Collins, who I think voted for it now, is going to announce how she's going to vote tomorrow. So it's a very dramatic day in the Senate. I'm just updating you from what Amy was talking about a minute ago. But this is if you'd like hearing about the news, 813-238-8001 or WMNF.org.
And this hour, before we put Dan Ruth on in the next hour, we've got to raise at least $2,500. So let's see if we can get that first phone call at 813-238-8001. Sean, we got to go back to hear Democracy Now! Because we've got to create some space here for Daniel Ruth and I to talk to each other in the last half hour of this Radioactivity show. Can we get one donation? Can you go online to WMNF.org and make that contribution? We're hoping you will. Go to WMNF.org, make a contribution, help keep Radioactivity on the air, which is what I call my 11 o'clock show. Please call us up right now at 813-238-8001. We want to thank one person. Anonymous has just donated $388. So that is a big help. Mm-hmm. That means that now we need to raise less than $2,000. So we're getting closer. But let's see if we can get that first phone call at 813-238-8001.
We need to hear from you. You can also donate online at WMNF.org. If you like Democracy Now!, if you like Radioactivity, True Talk, give us a call, 813-238-8001.
Boy, one phone call right now would really help out.
Hey. walk with
This is WMNF.
By the Brazilian musician Gilberto Gil. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Voters in Brazil head to the polls Sunday, an election that could reshape the political landscape of South America. Polls show the current front runner is the far-right Jair Bolsonaro, a former army officer who's openly praised Brazil's military dictatorship, which lasted from 1964 to 1985. Bolsonaro has a long history of making racist, misogynistic, homophobic comments. He's encouraged police to kill suspected drug dealers. Most polls show Bolsonaro winning on Sunday, but failing to win enough votes to avoid a runoff election October 28th. He's risen to the polls since September 8th, when he was stabbed while campaigning. Bolsonaro also directly benefited from the jailing of former President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva in April, who had been leading all presidential polls. Lula remains in jail on what many consider trumped-up corruption charges to prevent him from becoming president. Lula, the head of the Workers' Party, was then forced to drop out of the race. Lula's handpicked successor, Fernando Haddad, is currently placing second in most polls. On Saturday, tens of thousands took part in women-led rallies in Rio de Janeiro, Sao Paulo, and other cities to protest Bolsonaro. The theme of the protests, not him.
My name is Jade, and I'm here because Bolsonaro is dangerous. He represents hatred for our country, because he represents the loss of the few rights that the people he targets, such as the black people, the indigenous people, and the LGBT community and women, have conquered so far. He represents a threat to democracy in our country, a democracy that we are still building.
Joining us in Rio de Janeiro is Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Glenn Greenwald, who co-founded The Intercept. Glenn, welcome back to Democracy Now! Can you talk about the significance of what is happening right now in Brazil, and particularly on Sunday, the election?
To begin with, the significance is that Brazil is a country of 210 million people, so it's the fifth most populous country in the world, right behind the United States, the second largest in the hemisphere and the most influential in all of Latin America. It's also the seventh largest economy in the world with major oil reserves. And what the Western media has often been doing in talking about Bolsonaro is calling him Brazil's Trump, which drastically and radically understates the case. He's much closer to, say, Duterte in the Philippines or even General Sisi in Egypt, both in terms of what he intends to do and wants to do and what he's able to do, given the fragility of Brazil, which is an extremely young democracy that exited a military dictatorship only 33 years ago and therefore doesn't have the same kind of institutions to limit what someone would want to do the way, say, the United States or the UK would. So it's an extremely dangerous moment for this country. Polls do show that he's unlikely to win in the first round on Sunday, but there is a possibility that he might, that he could actually just get 50% of the vote and avoid a runoff entirely. But even if he does make the runoff, the signs are really showing that he's likely to win against Lula's handpicked successor because of how much animus has been built up by the media and the business class toward PT in this country.
And can you talk more about just exactly what Bolsonaro represents, his homophobic comments, his anti-women comments, his support of the Brazilian military dictatorship?
And, you know, you can go through the whole list of shocking comments. He once said in an interview that he would rather hear that his son died in a car accident than hear that his son is gay. He told a colleague in the lower house of Congress, where he served for 30 years, when she accused him of defending torture and rape, which he did during the dictatorship, that she need not worry because, in his words, she didn't deserve to be raped by him, meaning that she was too ugly to deserve and merit his rape. There's a whole slew of comments like that about black people, about the indigenous. But the much more worrying aspect are not these kind of comments, but the policies that he is explicitly endorsing. His model for how he wants to deal with crime are the world's worst dictators. People like Pinochet, he's advocated that we do things like in the Philippines, where we just send the military military and the police to just indiscriminately slaughter whoever they think is a drug dealer or a criminal without trials. He believes in military rule. He doesn't regard the military coup of 1964 and the 21-year resulting military dictatorship as a coup or as a dictatorship. He regards it as something noble and wants to replicate it. And he has the entire top level of the Brazilian military supporting him and behind him. So you really don't have institutions the way you do in the U.S., like a strong Supreme Court or a kind of deep state of the CIA and the FBI or political parties that would constrain him in what he wants to do. And especially given how much popular support there now is behind him, there's a substantial part of the country that is genuinely terrified about what he intends to do and intends to do rather quickly and probably can do, namely bringing back the worst abuses of the kinds of dictatorships that summarily executed dissidents, that shut down media outlets, that closed Congresses that we thought was a thing of the past here in Latin America, but is now on the verge of returning to its most important and largest country.
Last month, the world-renowned dissident linguist Noam Chomsky met with Brazil's imprisoned former president, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, his visit coming shortly after Lula officially pulled out of the presidential race. Speaking outside the prison after a visit, Noam Chomsky condemned the right-wing media in Brazil.
He has just had the great privilege of spending an hour with Lula, and one of the points that he emphasized was that during his entire tenure in office, there was just a constant flood of attacks from all the media, constant, thousands of attacks from every direction, which of course confuses and undermines public opinion. So the answer to your question is something is needed to counter the concentrated power of right-wing media, which particularly in Latin America just overwhelms everything.
So that is Noam Chomsky. Glenn Greenwald, a couple questions about that. How is the media allowed to cover Noam Chomsky visiting Lula in prison? And also the significance of what's happened to Lula and then who Haddad, the person, the hand-picked successor to Lula, is?
So I met with Noam Chomsky after that meeting in São Paulo, and we talked a lot about the dynamics that have brought us to this point. And one of the things we focused most on during our discussion was the fact that the dynamic is so similar to what's happening in the U.S., the U.K., and in Western Europe, where you see this spread of extremism and this rise of right-wing fanaticism, and the media outlets and the establishment factions that have laid the groundwork for its rise refuse to take any responsibility. And that's definitely the case here in Brazil, where a very oligarchical media is in the hands of a small number of very rich families and has sown the seeds and has kind of created the climate in which Bolsonaro's victory is possible. Even to this very minute, even though these journalists are themselves afraid of a Bolsonaro win and are not supporting him, they nonetheless continue to endorse this narrative that is the biggest asset for Bolsonaro, which is the idea that PT, the Workers' Party, and Bolsonaro are just opposite sides of the same coin. You have left-wing dictatorship or right-wing dictatorship, and both are equally bad. PT ran this country for 14 years, and whatever else you might want to say about it, whatever mistakes they made, you certainly had a very free and open press that constantly attacked it. They impeached one of their presidents and put the other one in prison. So the idea that it's a dictatorship on par with what Bolsonaro wants to do is grotesque, but it's the sort of thing that's normalizing Bolsonaro. And the thing that he has done, Bolsonaro, that's probably the smartest, is he has chosen as his kind of economic guru, the person he said he was going to put in charge of the economy, a kind of classic right-wing University of Chicago neoliberal economist that the international market and that the oligarchical class absolutely adores. And so it's kind of neutralized what otherwise would have been the opposition to them. And what they've done to Lula, not just putting him in prison when he was leading the polls, but since then, what they've done is They've banned all media outlets from even being able to interview Lula. We've tried. Others have tried. There's a prior restraint order on the part of the Supreme Court to prevent Lula from being able to speak out at this crucial moment. It's not enough just to put him in prison and to stop him from running when people wanted him to be president. They've silenced him through censorship orders that apply not just to him, but to all of us in the media. And so Brazilian institutions, the Brazilian establishment, bears a lot of blame. Just like U.S. institutions do for the rise of Trump, British institutions do for Brexit, and just the general globalization policies of Europe does for the rise of right-wing extremism in that part of the world as well.
I want to turn to a former Brazilian president, or the former Brazilian President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva himself, front runner until he was jailed. I spoke to him right before he went to jail, and he was talking about the presidential candidate, Jair Bolsonaro.
No, ele é deputado federal, é me.
He is a member of the Federal Congress. He is was an army captain in the Brazilian army. The information that we have is that he was expelled from the Brazilian army. And his behavior is far right wing, fascist. He is very much prejudiced against women, against blacks, against indigenous persons, against human rights. He believes that everything can be resolved with violence. So I don't think he has a future in Brazilian politics. He has the right to run. He speaks. He projects a certain image that to please a part of the society that is of the extreme right. But I don't believe that the Brazilian people have an interest in electing someone with his sort of behavior to serve as president of the republic.
Do you think he was happy with Marielle's death?
I think so, because he's preaching violence every day. He preaches violence. He believes that those who defend human rights are doing a disservice to democracy. He thinks that those who defend women's rights are doing a disservice to democracy. Likewise, those who defend the rights of the black community. He is against everything that is discussed when one is talking about human rights.
That was Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva speaking in March on Democracy Now! For the Hour. You can check it out, democracynow.org. And at the end, he was talking about the assassination of Rio City Councilwoman Marielle Franco. Your comments on what he said as we begin to wrap up, Glenn.
So, I mean, just the last part about the assassination of Marielle Franco, which I've spoken on your show about before, just to give you a sense of what the climate is like here. Just this week, two candidates from Bolsonaro's party, including one of whom who's running for Congress and ran as the vice mayoral candidate of Bolsonaro's son, who ran for mayor of Rio 4 years ago, took a street sign in commemoration of Marielle Franco and broke it in half. And wearing shirts that had pistols on them, pointed directly at the camera, displayed it proudly for the camera. And then the last line of the post on social media that they wrote in to accompany the photo was, for you scumbag leftists, when we take over, your days are numbered. Exactly as Lula said, the climate is one of violence. Bolsonaro's signature gestures for his campaign is to put his fingers in the position of a pistol. They want to use violence to solve political problems here. They're very explicit and open about that. But unfortunately, everybody who's been in charge of Brazilian society, including PT, including the establishment, needs to also ask itself what it has done to make this country lose so much hope and faith that it's willing to abandon democracy and turn to a demagogue and an extremist like Bolsonaro. That's the key question that I think needs to be asked if he does end up winning.
Well, that's Glenn Greenwald being interviewed by Amy Goodman on today's Democracy Now! And the election in Brazil, at least the first round of elections, is this this Sunday. Well, this is WMNF in Tampa, where you're probably not going to hear a long interview about Brazil's elections anywhere else. I know there's a large Brazilian community here in the Tampa Bay area, but if you enjoy listening to the in-depth coverage of Democracy Now!, and if you like what you hear on the 11 o'clock show, Radioactivity, please call us up right now as we fundraise here at WMNF and trying to keep the radio station going for another 4 months. I'm Rob Lurie, and I want to thank a few people. Tim and Patricia Moran from Tampa have made a $100 contribution. They like Amy Goodman, True Talk, Mark Biro, and Daniel Ruth. And Tim and Patricia, thanks for that nice contribution. Greg Dobbins is taking the Trump Survival Kit, the flash drive. And Greg, thanks. In Crystal Beach, that's a $100 contribution. Thanks to Anonymous making a $20 contribution. Loves the news and public affairs, especially Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman. And this Anonymous donation is making a The person is making a $10 donation from Sebring. Malcolm Morgan from Tampa is making a $100 contribution, especially happy about the midday and morning news shows, and also likes Sunday with the Simca and the Caribbean cruise. So, Malcolm, thanks for that nice contribution. Kevin Z is making a donation of $50 per month. And so, Kevin, thank you so much for that $600 donation. And he is rejoining the circle of friends. Thanks for that nice contribution. Likes Democracy Now! In the 11 o'clock show. And Gina Thomas, a $5 a month donation. Circle of friends, thank you, Gina, for that nice contribution of $60. So, Gina, thanks. A regular listener to this show. Daniel Ruth is here. Daniel, you going to vote in the Brazilian election?
I would probably have to vote for Sergio Mendes, I guess.
Yeah, you're a big jazz fan. So how you doing? So we're going to try to pitch in the next 90 minutes. We're going to try to raise about $4,000 in the next 90 minutes. Are you up for it?
I'm very excited.
Good. All right. You've seen your, you know, you've had your vitamins this morning and went to the gym. And
no, not yet. I'm still recovering from my knee. So,
you know, I got to ask you what you think about the Kavanaugh nomination.
Well, we'll know for sure by tomorrow. I think in any event, it's going to be very, very close within a vote or two. One of the interesting flies in this ointment is the Montana Senator Daines is in Montana for his daughter's wedding tomorrow.
And he might miss the vote?
Well, I just caught a piece of this before I came in. I think what they're going to do is move the vote to Sunday if he can't make it back. Because it is his daughter's wedding. He's probably going to be half in the bag by the time the thing ends and couldn't get back here. We went with the time difference. You know,
that'll be late. His excuse when people start getting angry at the vote.
That's right.
So Lisa Murkowski looks like she might not vote for Kavanaugh.
Well, she voted no on the cloture vote, and Manchin voted yes. But this really, it's just like people kind of, you know, treading water here until tomorrow. That's the vote that counts. Yeah. And we'll see what Manchin does. And
all right,
but it would appear that Murkowski is going. It may well vote no, because she has some impunity to do so. She won't suffer any political consequences back home, at least, voting no.
So our conservative friends tell me, they say, look, all Kavanaugh did was he drank a little bit and got into a bar fight. This is all stuff that's 37 years ago. It doesn't count. Got in a bar fight. New York Times does a story, made too much of it.
Well, I don't think we really know what happened with respect to Dr. Ford. I think she is a very credible witness, but there's only two people. And the other guy, Judge, I guess his name is, appears to be of no help at all. So let's just put the sexual assault issue aside for just a moment. I think his temperament alone disqualifies him for the... When you watched his performance last week before the Congress, it really peeled off a part of his personality and behavior that we'd never seen. I kept waiting for him to pull out the two steel balls and start asking who stole his strawberries.
Doing Humphrey Bogart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Captain Queeg. Yeah. Kane Mutiny. And that sort of temperament, I think, really was off-putting to a lot of people. They saw a side of him that even his friends, I think, had never experienced before.
Well, we're going to try to raise some money here. Daniel and I are going to talk about politics. And if you enjoy listening to Daniel Ruth, and if you enjoy listening to Radioactivity, please call us up at 813-238-8001. We've got to raise in the total 2 hours. We've got to raise about $5,000 or $6,000. We've had a good flurry of support already, but please call us up at 813-238-8001. On the other side, you know, the boys will be boys dismissal of Kavanaugh's behavior or alleged behavior. And then you've got women who are coming out saying, this is exactly what happened to me. I was a victim of this sort of thing.
Right.
I didn't remember when it happened because I've tried to put it behind me. And, you know, I've talked to several women who just revealed to me this week, mm-hmm. a person that I'm not even going to say what she does, mm-hmm. but I see her every 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, this happened to me when mm-hmm. I was 17 years old. Mm-hmm. And she says, I never talk about it. I don't even tell my close friends about it.
It is amazing how many women out there have been exposed to sexual assault, certainly sexual harassment. It's happened to my wife and her work experience, and that's part of the interesting side effect of the Me Too movement is it's now so many women are indeed coming forward, which would suggest, I think, maybe I'm wrong, that even if Kavanaugh gets confirmed, that this could be a Pyrrhic victory for the Republicans because we're coming up on the midterms, and I think this could well motivate an awful lot of women to come forward and vote against Republicans.
I think the lack of sensitivity to women
exactly.
is enormous. The other thing I was wondering about is that the Republicans right now are saying, look, this was a fair FBI investigation. He's gone through six previous background checks. Now they did another background check, and so now we know all that we need to know about
Brett Kavanaugh. I mean, a lot of people weren't interviewed. This is for a Supreme Court, a lifetime Supreme Court appointment. There is no rush to do the vote. I mean, even if the Republicans lost the Senate in November, they would still have all that lame duck time between the election and the next Congress to vote on Kavanaugh if they want. So there's no real rush here to get this done. So why not simply let the FBI be the FBI, let them run down all these leads so there is no question, there is no cloud, there is no doubt that this guy has been thoroughly vetted. And then if they want to vote to approve him, well, then the Republicans would be on some pretty strong paper to say, well, we looked under every rock, we turned over every leaf, we did everything the party opposite asked us to do, and we found nothing, for example. So let's all vote and get it over with.
Yeah.
But they didn't do that.
Why do you think the rush to do it?
I don't really understand why, because for the very reason that I pointed out a moment ago, is that they have plenty of time.
Yeah. All right, so in the Washington Post today, three of Kavanaugh's drinking buddies write an op-ed. I mean, Kavanaugh did this op-ed this week for the Wall Street Journal, but then and said that he acted wrongly. I don't know if it was an outright apology in the Wall Street Journal, mm-hmm. but he regretted what he did. But then the three drinking buddies come out this week and say he shouldn't be nominated.
Right.
He shouldn't be confirmed to the Supreme Court.
Right.
So if you're drinking buddies, lose your drinking buddies. Who else do you have?
Not too many. You know, as some people may know who listen, you and I, you're from Erie, and I went to Gannon University in Erie, and we're both familiar with Gannon. And when I went to college, did we drink beer? You better believe we drank a lot of beer.
It was that 3.2% beer. Did you drink the real stuff?
Well, we went to, for the hard stuff, we went to Fredonia.
That's right. You could go across the state line because the drinking age was 18
was
in
18,
New York.
It was 21 in Pennsylvania. And the New York state line was about 10 or 15 miles away. And we would just drive across the state line. But let's face it, even in those days, I mean, you could get served. It was, I've said before, I grew up in Akron. When I was 17, 18, 19, there were plenty of bars that I could walk into.
I went to Sullivan's in that town, which is right by Gannon.
It was a different era.
At 17, I could get served.
Yes. It was a whole different era.
Yeah.
But when I was in college, I mean, sure, we had our parties and we had our kegs and we drank and had a good time. But I honestly can say that I have no recollection whatsoever of being so drunk that I didn't know where I was or what I was doing or couldn't recall the next morning, the night before. I just never, I enjoyed my beer, but I never drank it to the excess that I passed out. I mean, I just
I drink a lot of beer to pass out.
You really do. Yes, you really
do. It's not that strong.
Right.
Yeah. So the Jesuit magazine, America, rescinds its endorsement mm-hmm. of Kavanaugh. The ABA says, hold on. The American Bar Association says, hold on. Don't confirm him. Justice John Paul Stevens yesterday says, nah, I used to support him. I don't support him anymore.
Yeah.
But the Senate's not listening. Or at least the Republicans.
Well, Mitch McConnell's not listening.
Yeah.
But what do you expect? I mean, I was listening to that fatuous, phony Lindsey Graham the other day talking about whether this is a monstrous situation. This is all coming from the same group of boobs who denied Merrick Garland even a hearing, refused to even meet with him, and now and held up his nomination for well over a year, or close to a year, and so he never even got a hearing. And now they're talking about, well, you know, we need all this, we need fair play and due process and justice for Judge Kavanaugh over here. I mean, I'm not going to get into whataboutism here, but the hypocrisy, the rank hypocrisy over the way they treated Merrick Garland as opposed to Kavanaugh is so glaring and so obvious, and they are totally, utterly shameless about it.
So, we're going to talk some more. Daniel Ruth is here. I'm Rob Lori. Thanks to all the people who have been donating. Bob Hoke from Tampa made a $100 contribution. Bob, thank you, and thanks for volunteering here at WMNF. Dan Harvey from St. Pete made a $250 contribution, likes the 11 o'clock show, and Daniel Ruth and Sid Flannery, the 60s show and the Freak Show. Dan, thank you. That's huge. And Debbie Sergio from Newport Richie made a $50 donation. Thank you, Debbie, going to the tribute to The Last Waltz that's going on this weekend. Thank you. And Roy Murray from Port Charlotte has made a $20 contribution. Roy walked in and took a tour of the station. Roy, thanks for driving up here. And Carol Arenas has made a $100 contribution. She walked in with her donation, too. So remember, we're on our way to try to raise $5,000 over 2 hours. If you can make a contribution right now, the best way to make it is to either go to our website, our secure website, WMNF.org, or you can call us up. We've got the best looking group of phone answers back there, I think, of all week. 813-238-8001. That's a phone number to that's the phone number to call. 813-238-8001. Well, did you watch SNL?
Yeah, it was great.
Matt Damon.
He was terrific. Yeah. I'm a big fan of Kate McKinnon. I thought she was great as Lindsey Graham, and then later great as Ruth Bader Ginsburg. You know.
Yeah, pretty incredible. But do you think that riles up people on the right that support Kavanaugh when these comedians on SNL make fun of them? And
well, you know what? Maybe it does, but I don't care.
Yeah. All right. 813-239-9663. Email address dj@wmnf.org. I do think there is a question about Kavanaugh's truthfulness.
Yes, and many people have pointed this out. Let me ask you, we're just a couple years apart in age, and when we were growing up, do you remember ever keeping a journal or making these meticulous notes in a calendar, even up to the point of making, sexual references? I don't know anybody of our generation, and he's younger than we are, but I don't know anybody of our generation that ever would have done that. It was the only, I went to my 50th high school reunion earlier this summer, and at some point I was going through some box somewhere. I ran across the only, I guess you might call it a diary entry, that I ever did when I was one. I kept a list in high school of my track times.
Oh yeah,
And the 180.
What'd you run?
I ran the 180 low hurdles, and I was on the mile relay team, and I was
a
broad jumper.
Oh wow!
And I kept over the course of the track season, I kept track of my times. That's it. I never had any ramblings about
Brewskis
or going over to Squiggy's house, on Friday. Never met nothing like that.
Well, Matt Damon, he said that creepy calendar. Who made the reference on SNL? But it is interesting that the calendar seems to indict Kavanaugh, because it says on July 1st, these very friends that Dr. Ford said were around, they're getting together on July 1st. They're going to have brewskis. And
he's making references to, I guess, sex acts that I was not familiar with.
But I had no idea what the Devil's Triangle was.
I didn't either. But apparently, and he said, oh, it's a drinking game. Well, no, it's not, apparently. Right. And a couple other references. And this whole thing about the Renata alumnus thing.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they were libeling, apparently, a young woman at another school, and claiming to have had sexual relations with her. In other words, they were suggesting this young girl was a loose woman, and that's awful. And they were bragging about being part of the Renata Alumnus Club. Well, that's a pretty sleazy thing to do.
Well, so if you're lying, I mean,
and he lies about it.
Yeah, there was a New York Times story this week that said that Brett Kavanaugh did use the nickname Bart. which is what he's named in this book by this judge character. So he's used this, but if you watch him on the witness stand, he's denying he ever used the name Bart. He's denying he knew some of these people, and there's pictures of him with these people. I mean, how many small lies before then you say, okay, he's...
You know, at the end of the day, I suppose there's a real potential political liability for having done this. But if he'd simply said, look, I don't remember ever assaulting Dr. Ford. I do admit that I did drink an awful lot in high school, and it is entirely possible, although I don't remember it, but it's entirely possible that at some point I might well have engaged in this sort of behavior. And if I did, I apologize to Dr. Ford, and I am absolutely, unequivocally ashamed of myself.
Yeah, apologize.
And you know, in America, we have great sympathy for people who apologize, and great sympathy for people who say, I made a mistake. And I think most people would have said, okay, that was pretty sleazy. And there would have been some people that would have said, well, you don't deserve to be on the Supreme Court. Fair enough. But there would have been others who would have said, I give him credit for coming forward and at least accepting the responsibility for his drinking habits while he was in high school.
And he never did.
And he never did.
All right, so I'm wondering if Kavanaugh is really a judge or is he a political operative? Because every time I looked, well, he was involved in the Clinton stuff. He was involved in vetting judges. He had all these political appointments over the years. Did he really practice law?
No. Yeah, okay, he spent 1 year in private practice.
All right, so why are we appointing somebody who didn't really practice law? He was really a political animal.
Well, you could almost make the same argument for most of these justices. You know, most of them come from political appointments. They have served on various. They've been like.
You know, I think of Thurgood Marshall, and I think there was a justice that really was
He tried capital murder cases,
right?
And I think Sotomayor was a prosecutor for a while. But most of these justices, they all come out of governments, some government agency like Roberts did, or they come out of some think tank, or they've all been law professors. Not one of these people, with the possible exception of Sotomayor at the moment, not one of these people has ever, like, tried a case, has ever closed a mortgage or handled a divorce case or a DUI, had a client who had a, you know, the nuts and bolts, minutia, nitty-gritty of law. They've all been sitting up in these ivory towers, rubbing their chins, posing for holy pictures, you know, writing these legal tracts, you know, like they're Blackstone or somebody. And then they get tapped on the shoulder to be an appellate court judge, usually the second DCA, because that's like the second most powerful court in the land. And that's like the farm team for the Supreme Court. Well, okay, I mean, I maybe need a mix of some intellectual types. But I would like to see a couple, and they all come from Harvard or Yale. Almost all of them. Yeah. I mean, don't tell me that there isn't a tremendous lawyer with legal skills that came out of the University of Florida.
Well, I think of Barry Cohen, who just passed away, you're rolling your eyes, but talk about a good, sharp attorney who didn't. Yeah. All right. So Daniel Ruth is here. We're trying to raise money.
I'll see your Barry Cohen and I'll raise you a John Fitzgibbons.
Okay, Fitzgibbons is good. What was his law school?
I don't know, but yeah. I don't think he went to Harvard or Yale.
813-238-8001. Well, we've got about at least $3,000 to raise in the next hour. You're listening to Radioactivity on WMNF in Tampa. My guest is the great Daniel Ruth, a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist at the Tampa Bay Times. And we're hoping that you will call us up and help us reach our goal. We've got more than $3,000 to raise in the next 60 minutes. 813-238-8001. You can also make your contribution online. Go to WMNF.org. Lisa O'Kane, thank you for making a $30 contribution. She says, great job. She listens every day. So, Lisa, thank you very much.
And don't forget that Judge Kavanaugh to Trump represents a get-out-of-jail card. Because of his prior...
Well, is that the rush?
I mean, Well, I don't know why the rush is. I really don't. But the selection of Kavanaugh represents a sort of get-out-of-jail card for Trump because Kavanaugh has written and has spoken about a very narrow legal view, of whether a president can be subpoenaed or impeached and so forth and so on. And with the looming Mueller investigation hanging over Trump's head, I think he saw a potential challenge to whatever Mueller comes up with before the Supreme Court, and having a hand-picked jurist on the court who takes a very dim view of presidential subpoenas and presidential impeachments.
Well, we're just about a minute away from the news, and we're talking with Daniel Ruth. This is WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM, and we hope that you'll make a contribution to keep these kind of discussions on the air. If you like listening to Dan's show, if you like listening to Radioactivity, we hope you'll make a contribution at 813-238-8001. You know, I'm just wondering, how would you describe the legal action that's impending on President Trump? Let's take the Mueller investigation out of it. But mm-hmm. there seems to me that if you look around the country, between the women that are accusing Trump of wrongdoing, mm-hmm. the people that are suing him for his past business practices, mm-hmm. then you talk about some of the state attorneys general who see some of the problems mm-hmm. with what Trump has done. I mean, he's got to be facing an avalanche of lawsuits.
Yeah, and don't forget, too, that the lawsuit involving the emoluments clause is also moving forward, which could be very problematic because basically you have people that are giving the President of the United States bribes.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to take a break for news. Daniel Ruth is going to be back in 5 minutes. So we're going to find out the latest on the Kavanaugh confirmation procedure. This is WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. Please make your contribution online at WMNF.org. Here's the news.